It has been my honor and privilege to serve this congregation as worship associate for the past 3 years. As a layperson, my time of service is ending in the next few months. I look at these past 3 years, it has deepened my faith, my connection to our community, and how this experience has enriched my life as a Unitarian Universalist, and I am deeply grateful. One of our tasks as worship associates is to help plan the worship calendar several months in advance. I knew in March that I wanted a slot in August. The topic was clear to me. Exactly how the order of service would take shape, or what I would need to accomplish, what I hoped for in this service, well, that's been something that I've been pondering deeply. I am grateful that our co-ministers for the opening have opened up this time to me for the month of August in their first year anniversary with us at UUCB. Can we show them some love for their first year here? As my topic took shape in March, I began with my feeling that the political landscape was overtaking our culture to a place I did not like. And here is where I diverge. I must, at the outset of this service, make a simple declaration. I love Donald Trump. I love him. Deeply and without reservation. I love him as Martin Luther King Jr. declared his Christian love for all those who hate. As Martin said, I'm sure glad Jesus didn't say we had to like our enemies. But love them we must. And I love Donald Trump. That's a relief. I am now out of the closet on that one. I must also disclose that before getting into this sermon too deeply, that before coming to UUCB, before becoming churched for the first time in my adult life, I spent more than 20 years in therapy. And how I come to today's topic is through the crucible of a personal journey of deep introspection over the past, my past, and living with and recovering from the aftermath of being raised in a dysfunctional family system. The past is always present. There is no such thing as just get over it. If I can explain, the past is more than palpable. We can see it, we can touch it. Everything comes from somewhere. If we were to survey this sanctuary, I see the chalice, and I know the backstory of how this chalice came to our congregation. I see the cushions on which we all sit and understand that these were created by the loving hands of crafts group who wanted to make sure that our time in service was more comfortable and that the hard pews would no longer wear upon our time in the pews. I see the plaques at the bank of our sanctuary and know a little bit about the stories of the present families who are still with us. And I see our mismatched doorknobs at the entrance of our sanctuary, and I know the story of how this flaw and imperfection came to be part of the entrance to our sanctuary. There they remain, mostly unnoticed, yet plain as day for anyone who cares to look and really see what is present. The past is all around us. Always. So, as I said, I spent 20 years in deep contemplation and examination of a childhood and early adulthood that was difficult. When I was done with this, I put those experiences in a box and I placed them on the shelf. And coming to UUCB around that same time, I found that I had an incredible amount of time freed up. I no longer needed to expend that on examining my past. I began using that time doing what I had done before, but just in a different way. That introspection that I had trained on myself, I began looking at the past and studying civil rights, decade by decade, taking it back through the 60s, through the 50s, through the 40s, 30s, 20s, 10s, pre-Civil War. And what I found was a history that was rich and multifaceted. It's like looking at a gem. What we get is just a little small piece of the story, but it is not anywhere near the full story as we could see today, living what we are living in our times. 50 years from now, what will people read about these times? It's, as W.E.B. Du Bois said, it's like looking through a telescope through the wrong end. So I began using my time studying the past, examining events and people and issues of the day in all facets of light. And the topic that found me in the study of civil rights, I went through the decades, just as I had done in my personal analysis, and I began to get a fuller, broader picture of the past and how it came together into the present. In this age of Black Lives Matter, the story I keep returning to is the short and tragic life and death of Emmett Till. There are those in our culture who still do not get it, who still insist on saying, all lives matter, as if the Black Lives Matter movement is a myopic view of the true world at large. As if to leave my politically correct hat at the door, I would respond to that mocking phrase, all lives matter, with one simple word, duh. Would that move the dialogue forward? Would people who do not get it really understand what we mean when we say Black Lives Matter? Hardly. I could spend the next 20 minutes reciting the names of victims of police violence over the past just 5 years. 20 minutes, just a simple list of names. Again, with little true understanding on the part of those who have decided that all lives matter is a better phrase which more aptly describes their worldview. Those are people willing to scatter rhetoric to nullify our worldview. I'll give you an example. Even if in my own family it goes something like this, I would say something innocuous like, the sun rises in the east and sets in the west. Well, one of my older brothers would inevitably reply, the sun doesn't rise, it never has, it never will. Literalists. So, to that, I might reply something like, I have faith that the sun will appear on the horizon to the east. It will follow an arc across the sky, and it will vanish below the horizon on the west. I have faith this will happen day in and day out. Mamie Till had faith. Mamie Till was Emmett's mother. She had faith that when she put Emmett on the train from Chicago to Mississippi that summer of 1955. Mamie Till had faith that Emmett would return to her in the fall. And so he did, but not in any way she had imagined. His mangled, bloated body, exhumed from the waters of the Tallahatchie, was barely recognizable. His supposed crime was he spoke to a 21-year-old Carolyn Bryant, the white married proprietor of a small grocery store, where Tillett was accused of a flirting and or whistling at Bryant. Years later, Bryant disclosed that in 1955 she had fabricated testimony that Till made verbal or physical advances towards her in the store. And this woman lived with the guilt of the consequences of her words several decades after Emmett's death. And she finally had the courage to confess this to a reporter who could now add this as a footnote to history of this particular gruesome event. Several nights after the store incident, Bryant's husband, Roy, and his half-brother went to Till's great uncle's house and abducted Emmett. They took him away, beat him, mutilated him before shooting him in the head and sinking his body in the Tallahatchie River. 3 days later, Till's body was discovered and retrieved. Till's body was returned to Chicago. His mother, who had mostly raised him, insisted on a public funeral with an open casket to show the world the brutality of Emmett's killing. The open coffin funeral held by Mamie Till Bradley exposed the world to more than her son Emmett Till's bloated, mutilated body. What Mamie Till had faith in demanding this open casket. She had faith that this open casket funeral would speak to blacks and whites alike throughout the nation. That mothers and fathers whose hearts would be laid bare, and in so doing, they would find common ground to stand together against this atrocity. Tens of thousands attended his funeral or viewed his open casket, and images of this were published in black-oriented magazines and newspapers, rallying popular black support and white sympathy across the United States. And there came an intense scrutiny was brought to bear on the lack of black civil rights in Mississippi, with newspapers around America critical of the state. In September of 1955, Bryant and Millam were acquitted by an all-white jury. But the story of Emmett Till did not end there. Out of the tragedy emerged an even greater determination for civil rights. 2 months later, in Birmingham, Alabama, Mamie Till's act of faith touched the heart and soul of one Rosa Parks. Sitting on a bus that December, Rosa was contemplating Emmett Till's death when a white patron entered the bus and by custom expected Rosa to give up her seat and move to the back of the bus. Rosa said she thought of Emmett Till and just could not bring herself to move. This was less an act of defiance and more an act of one acting out of love. And so the Montgomery bus boycott of 1955 through 1956 began, lasting through the following December when the citizens of Alabama were victorious in desegregating Montgomery's bus system. We are, each of us, carried on the waves of the past. In January 1963, 8 years later, Bayard Rustin and A. Philip Randolph, who had been trying to organize a march on Washington for some 25 years. In January, again, they tried. They said, this is the 100-year anniversary of Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation. We've got to march on Washington. Well, as with all movements, there are disparate factions. And the disparate factions within the civil rights movement said, no, we don't want to march on Washington. Sorry, it's not time. Then a few months go by. There's Birmingham, there's Bull Connor, there's the dogs and the fire hoses being unleashed on children. That's May, and the following month, Medgar Evers is assassinated in June. So within a few short weeks, everybody who said no in January said, we've got to march on Washington. Let's remember who has marched on Washington up until that point. The Ku Klux Klan has marched several times in the first half of the 20th century. The veterans of the Civil War, both North and South, have marched in Washington several times. World War I veterans have marched in Washington. No blacks have ever marched in Washington to that point in time. So by July of 1963, everybody wanted to march. The groups met and turned their focus to the calendar, and they fixed their gaze on August 28, the 8-year anniversary of Emmett Till's death. And they said, that's the day we're going to march. And so the I Have a Dream speech that we all know today, which emerged as a testament of love, was part of the crucible of the death of Emmett Till. It's eternally linked to Emmett Till. The country riveted on that moment in time, and the hatred which created the death of Emmett was transformed to love by a mother who was so very determined to transform the event of her son's death to provide a focus for us to get past the hatred which caused his death. After many years have gone by, after seeing the photograph of Emmett's open casket, which I refuse to show you today because you can look it up for yourself. But what I see now, not instead of, but in addition to the terrible visage, which is a horrible testament to the damage that hatred causes, what I see now, Emmett's neck, with its jagged edges, are lovingly surrounded by a collar, without smoothing out the jagged edges, but simply and carefully surrounded with love. Standing on the side of love is not easy. As we work to make a better future, We must remember that the hatred we witness in others is misguided energy. There is no gain for us to hate the hater. We must remember that as we travel to the horizon, we carry with us only that which is in our own heart. If we walk toward tomorrow filled with hatred, that is what we bring with us to the horizon beyond today. If we do this, the hater has won because they have succeeded in filling our hearts with hatred. The vessel of our lives must always focus on loving our enemy. For in loving our enemy, we are so filled our own hearts with love that it cannot help but spill over and splash onto them. The successes of the civil rights movement were made possible through legislation, which in large part was supported by Protestant churches throughout this land. And I'm talking red states. We are part of that tradition. And we can continue to support the cause of freedom through living out the full meaning of standing on the side of love.